Okay, so Stephen, we can talk about the issues you're facing first, and I think they should be easily solved. So you're running out of disk space to store all the traces because so far you've been doing everything on your laptop,
Yeah.
correct? Okay, so we should get you set up with an account on one of our servers which has more disk space, and I think Leo can help with that. For instance, we have these cluster machines that have quite a bit of, well, they
Right.
have some storage space, but they also have a lot of memory, which might help you with your analysis.
The downside is that they're slower than the other machines.
The
It's only
CPU speed is slower, but
800 gigahertz.
they have more cores.
Which you're gonna use with your cache. Which you're gonna use in the cache.
Well, unless you do many analysis at the same time.
Yes, which is what I'm trying to do.
Well, he has a whole bunch of different things to run at the same time, right?
Yeah, it's true.
So you could spawn off many analysis tasks at the same
Right. So I can create an account for you in that machine. I already have the traces there.
Nice.
And, well, by the traces I mean the Cambridge traces. I don't have the other ones there.
Okay.
And those machines need to be accessed through a different machine from the university. You cannot log in directly with them because they're in a private network. So you have to log in to any machine in the university, in this department, and from that machine to that machine. Make sense?
Yeah, so I wouldn't be able to do it, say, at home through
At home, you connect to a machine here and use that as a proxy, and from that machine, you connect to the open.
So as long as I use another machine here, it's
Yes.
okay.
Doesn't it have to be a specific machine? That's the
I
head
don't
node.
think so.
It could be any machine in CS.
I believe so, yes.
Okay. I thought there was this one head machine that you had to connect to, but maybe that's
No.
outdated. Okay, so it's doable. So your storage issues are solved. It just you
Yeah.
have to do things differently. Hey,
Yeah,
I just
sorry.
left a message on your phone, so you
Yeah.
can ignore that. So nothing significant so far. We've been trying to find a solution for Steven's space storage space issues.
Yeah, because as you can see actually on the website, at some point I don't get anything else because I can't have anything else written to my file system. So, yeah, and then of course making graphs from 0 points of data is a little difficult at that point. And then I
Okay.
can't save it either way.
Is there a lot of space for this server?
Well, I was doing it all on my laptop, so now we're gonna hook me up with a server to work on.
Okay, so which one do we look at?
You can start with the HM, and then work your way down. It's user 2 that has the issues with the info, but I think it'll be starting in either the next or a couple from here. You won't be able to start seeing graphs.
Okay, so remind me.
The misses and evictions are separated by one, by each trace labeled, 0, 1, or so. And then the top one, for misses and evictions, is just the 1 gigabyte with 1,000 granularity. And the one that includes switches is the 1 gigabyte, 1,000 granularity with 15% threshold.
Okay.
Percent sign missing there.
Okay,
Wanted more, but.
so it's okay. So there are fewer evictions when you do
Which is
which is
kind of the
expected, but
point,
there's
yeah.
also more misses.
Yeah, so you have to figure out if there's a trade-off, if any. There are a good many, I think actually even the next case where the misses increase, but necessarily will evictions increase.
Okay. Wow. Okay, so here you're turning it off, but it's hurting performance because, well, it could be that you're not even populating the cache enough.
Right.
Yeah, I
Because
see.
there's more space in the cache, which is why you didn't evict any. And Okay, so this is the first one.
So this is the result from the simulation we discussed 2 weeks ago?
Yep. Well, except that he picked one threshold.
Okay.
Well, which is 15%.
Yeah, this time.
So there is one analysis that you could do where you vary the threshold on the x-axis and plot the miss rate and evictions on the y-axis. So these two guys on the y-axis, one y1 and y2, and on the x-axis you do, what is that, threshold.
Yeah, I was trying to, I wanted to do more thresholds, but like I said, I ran out of memory. So
this is just comparing two runs, one without
a threshold and one with a threshold.
A threshold to turn on and off the cache.
Yeah.
Right.
Before I had the threshold be applied whenever the calculated average, I mean the calculated miss rate, were to change, but this could lead to several switching. So instead, I took the average when I calculated every 1,000 or so, whatever the granularity is, get that average, and if it's below our threshold, then to switch. So that way, it isn't every one possibly one bouncing back and forth.
So the misses are higher. You have less evictions simply because you are bypassing the cache.
The only thing is that the switching is going to be delayed because we are averaging.
That's
over
the
downside.
Downside.
Mm-hmm.
But it adds an extra protection to the other type of switching. So.
Yeah.
Why 15%? Is it just
right.
A random number that you picked?
Yeah, right now, just to see what the effects are.
Well, the 15% is certainly not a good number because our misses increased by quite a bit, right?
Yeah, because I was trying to start finding at what point does the, I guess, what was it, benefits just level off?
Yeah.
So
it would be good to have that other chart where now that you can actually run the more simulations, you can have on the x-axis, you have the miss rate threshold where you switch, and this is an algorithm which is a static threshold algorithm, right?
Yeah.
So every point on the chart is one simulation, and you use just a fixed threshold.
Yeah.
And then on the y1 and y2, you can show the misses and evictions. And you can probably show switches as well. But that requires a way to figure it out. The other, let's go to the one of the other charts. Is there any chart where we have similar evictions, similar misses with a 15% threshold?
I think almost all of them technically show
higher misses.
Higher misses. I think there was one case where I saw the misses increase by, I think, one, but the evictions also decreased just by one. So
which one was that?
I'm having a tough time remembering.
Okay, let's go through that.
I think that was one of the cases. I remember some number being ever so slightly different.
So here
there's that case right there only has a 20 increase for misses.
No,
sorry, 1,020. Pardon me. That's what it got me. But yeah.
So there are 23 switches.
Oh, yeah, but look at that case.
20 more misses?
No, it's. Oh, wait.
But fewer evictions. Oh, no, there's more than that. There's a lot more.
Yeah, 1,020.
1,020.
But
this is for
much
the
less than 1,000.
Figures above or figures below?
Figures below. So
and this is actually 4,000. No, a lot fewer evictions.
Yeah.
Right? 6,000 fewer evictions, 1,000 more misses. That's interesting.
That could still be beneficial. That could still be beneficial.
Depending on the model.
Yeah.
Depending on how you model the cost of a replacement.
I mean, if you look at their at the situation now, it's kind of reasonable as to why he's acting like that, though.
Yeah.
With such a high miss rate for so long.
So this 100% miss rate, everything is a miss. So you might as well not switch off the algorithm. No, here we are turning on the algorithm.
That should be on, yeah.
Yeah, it should be on. So when does it go off? Here?
When it reaches below 15.
Interesting.
So you can't really see the effects too well from that, though.
Which workflow is this one?
That should be MDS1.
So do we know what that means?
Huh?
Do we know what that means?
I don't know, it's just what they need the Cambridge trace.
MDS.
MDS
so
is one of the traces.
Go back to that.
Metadata server.
Yeah. Cambridge
so,
files.
So where is the benefit here on the second row?
Here.
Yeah.
This is
so this is like the best situation for switching off, right? So you got a consistent period of time. Persistent across a long period of time with basically the original on the left figure shows that you have high miss rates.
Yeah.
Right?
Everything
so basically means that if you switch it off, you should benefit, right?
Right.
Yeah, but we have it on in this case.
We have it on?
Yeah, because everything above 15% is on. This is 100%.
Oh, it's above 15% is on.
Yes.
So we need to think more about...
Why is above 15% is on? Above 15% should be... I guess... hold on. It should be off, right? No?
No, based on our initial analysis.
Yeah.
There are two factors that contribute, that should contribute to the decision of turning it on and off.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just the number of misses. You should also take into account the size of the cache and how big is your working set size.
Right.
Because if your working set size is much bigger than the cache, there's nothing you can do.
This one could be because the working set is too large, right? So
yeah.
Because if you look at the original, it's just missing.
I mean,
right.
Just look at the 4 gigabyte one. I believe that's below it. You can see the difference.
Yeah.
And if it's missing, should that be?
No,
that
I mean,
difference?
No. I think that. When I was thinking about the modeling, I have more questions about it, and I have more and more doubts about the window and how it does involve the misses with deciding to cache out or not, given the reuse distance ranking function as a evaluation function for determining if evictions are necessary or not.
But should we finish this first?
Yeah.
Should we finish this first? Or
so, okay, let's finish it.
Yeah,
first.
I think
okay.
You have something which is very, maybe take time consuming, right?
Yeah,
that
no, we can talk about it later, but I think that even if the working set size is bigger than the size of the cache, we can still determine if it's okay to do an eviction or not, because we can still determine if the page that is deciding to to evict the victim will be our of the cache or not. So
for instance, I mean, this is a clear example of what you're saying. If you have 100% miss rate, why do replacement?
Right.
Because you're not going to gain anything.
Exactly.
Because everything is going to be a miss, whether or not you replace stuff. Correct? So I think the key is stability. It's at 100%, but it's stable. And if it's stable at any percent, you probably switch it off. That's my intuition.
Stable, not necessarily from the perspective of cache miss, right? I mean, it could be keep like 50% cache miss, for example, if that's what you observe. That's simply because there is a process with workload larger. It's always replacing stuff in there. And you will never actually be able to satisfy that process,
right.
Simply because it's just to keep actually having access, you know, with a larger working set.
Yeah, so, okay, let me talk about the intuition a little bit more. If you have a stable miss rate, right, if you see that it's 10% or 20% or 30%, whatever, in this case 100%, what it's saying is that you're missing on a certain fraction of the working set. The certain fraction of your accesses are to blocks that are outside the cache, which is why you have a miss rate. The remaining fraction, which is the hit rate, right, which is 100% minus whatever number you see there, is to blocks that are in the cache. And that will, those blocks that are in the cache will stay in the cache because they are more important, and other blocks that are less important do not get to go in the cache. But there are a certain fixed number or fixed fraction of axes that are to the blocks that are not in the cache. But all you end up doing is bringing them into the cache and then throwing them away, because the next time you access something that's outside the cache, you will replace the guy you brought in previously. Right? So this is my intuition. If you have a stable miss rate, then having the cache replacement algorithm on doesn't really help you that much. But if it's changing, the miss rate keeps changing, then there is potential benefit to turning on the cache replacement algorithm. So having a threshold doesn't address that intuition of mine. It's more to do with the stability.
I still have, I guess these guys probably have better models and to take a look. But, you know, just throw in the bits here. You can't look at the cache from a single application's point of view, because there are multiple processes that are contributing. So each one would have their working set.
Sure.
Right? So, for example, if you have a process that takes like 20% of the cache and needs to have 20% there because it's a constant accessing a working set, its working set, and which happens to be smaller than the 20%, suppose. Right? So having that cache there, that's why you see a sustained cache miss never going to reach 100% or 0%, because there's something there, some process contributing to the accesses, and so that it always miss, hit and bring on the new things, and so it's working perfectly well within that cache allocation.
Okay, so you're saying that if a process has 20% miss rate,
not 20% of the working set is 20% of the cache size, I suppose. There is a process.
Okay.
So
then
if
its working set is 20% of the cache size, then it'll have 100% hit rate.
It will have, but it's actually competing with the other processes as well. You have to keep this in mind.
Okay, so
right?
Whatever fits, so the working set is the way you model the working set is the working set is telescopic, right? So there is a more important working set embedded within a less important working set, embedded outside in a less. So if you think about it from that perspective, then there'll be some portion of that working set, although it can although the whole working set can fit in the cache,
mm-hmm.
because there's other competing workloads,
mm-hmm.
only a certain portion of that working set can actually be in the cache. So whatever is outside the cache will be missed, and there will be a
consistent
miss rate if the behavior is consistent.
I sort of see it a little bit different. In a sense, I see it like this, right? So you just visually sort of see how things are. So if you have, say, four processes, or maybe just making two, maybe easier, P1 and P2, right? You have, two processes. And the one is, this is its working set, and this is its working set.
Mm-hmm.
And what I view as working set is there is a frequency that process need to actually cover the space. So it's accessing here, and then here, and then here. There's some locality, of course, but sort of more or less sort of permeates through the space. That's
mm-hmm.
how that process.
So all
there's
blocks
a frequency. It
are equally important.
It's sort of equally important.
All
to some
blocks
extent.
Are equally important.
Let's simplify that way.
Yeah.
The same deal with this.
Yeah.
Equally important.
Yeah.
Now, your cache is this big.
Yeah. Correct.
So now,
how the projection of these two working sets map into the cache determines the ultimate cache miss rate.
Let me ask you a question. P1 and P2, all the items have across both processes the same importance?
Well, there are two applications, I suppose.
So they have
two different
frequencies of access
per item.
So
let's suppose
if P2's access frequency is greater than P1, then the only thing that would be in the cache is P2.
So this is
most or except one, all except one.
Yes.
All right. I haven't thought about that so much, but there is a frequency.
Yeah.
So I'll say F1 and F2. Frequency in terms of its intrinsic.
Yeah.
Sort of how I access the thing.
Yeah.
And there is a frequency in terms of how this intermixing of this, and how if in the end I see two accesses, and then I see eight, and then I see two, and I see eight, and then there are another frequency like that, right? So the 80% is getting to this, and you know, whatever determines this, it's beside the point. But I was saying they have some kind of frequency and stuff that causes projection into this, and then it causes different kind of mixing.
Yeah.
So now, if you say I am going to turn on and off.
If F2 greater than F1. If F2 is greater than F1, then the green box will only contain P2.
Only?
Yeah. Because this F2 is per item of P2, right?
Well, not necessarily. Well, if just F2 is bigger than F1.
Yeah.
You still have some mixing, right? Proportion.
No. LRU will just put F2 in. Because all the items of F2 are more important.
You have to say.
Let's say that F2 is twice bigger than F1, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You're gonna have more from P2, but it's not gonna be entirely P2.
Right. Yeah.
It'll be entirely P2 because none of P1 are more important than P2. LRU doesn't differentiate between P1 and P2.
My understanding of F1 and F2 is, let's say that in every interval of time, in every union of time, P2 issues two times more IOs than P1. Is that what you mean by frequency?
No.
Mm-hmm.
No, but you're talking about frequency of axes per item in the working set.
Oh, no. My understanding that
frequency is the
number of IO requests per unit of time per process.
Okay, then maybe we should talk about reuse distance because then it's clearer.
Right. I'm just saying reuse distance will make things a little bit mushier. That's just to say frequency is sort of more or less approximation.
The problem is that it doesn't tell you what goes in the green box. If you say that P2 is accessing, because now you also need to consider which items of P2 are being accessed within them.
True. There is going to be a reuse distance. We can say
what you can do is,
right.
if you do it that way, then you can do if F2 over size of P2 is greater than F1 over size of P1. Then we are looking at per item frequency.
You're looking at, that's good. This is a sort of normalization, right? You put the distance, that's a normalization factor.
Yeah. So
and in the end, I think there's going to be a proportion.
No, if this is true, if F2 over S2 is greater than F1 over S1, then all the green will be P2. P2 will contain only the items of, the cache will only contain the items.
Why is that?
Because every item of P2 is more important than every item of P1. Has a smaller reuse distance.
Let's assume that the distance, reuse distance, is forever. Let's just, just try to be hypothetical in this case.
So
if the reuse distance is forever, then it's not a working set. It's like a streaming access.
I'm randomly accessing this. This is my working set.
If you don't reuse it,
there will be some reuse distance, but it's hard to determine. I mean, how do you say reuse distance unless you take a look at it?
If there is no reuse distance, then you won't cache the item, right? Because LRU works on reuse distance. If you're talking about how the cache is being reused, then we need to talk about reuse distance of items.
So you are talking about... I see what you're pointing here. So you're talking about because of this, that this one makes it more likely that it's being...
Well, all items in the cache will be items from P2 because they are more important. LRU doesn't know that there are two processes, that there are two P2 and P1. It just knows that there are a set of data that are being accessed. Each data has a certain reuse distance. The data with the smallest reuse distance gets to stay on this in the cache. The others don't.
So,
but
you're,
if you
you're
have
thinking vessels of reuse distance,
it is. Yeah, I'm thinking of it because frequency divided by S2. Well, 1 over that would be the reuse distance. Higher frequency means lower reuse distance. So, I mean, if you do this, if you want to look at reuse distance. That is
right.
Distance.
Yeah. And if you...
So if you have many items with the same reuse distance, but they cannot all fit in the cache, then there is a problem because you keep replacing over and over again with no benefit. But you will also see the consistent miss rate. There will be a stability of miss rate.
Okay, so I guess I still need to wrap my brain on it in the sense that if you have an intermix sort of mixed workload coming in,
yeah.
Suppose they have working set. By the way, is purely hypothetical, right? So
yeah.
You think that there is a working set. That's the, how they actually repeated access
mm-hmm.
to this, right? And let's suppose that we simplify that by just the hit, the frequency of accessing divided by the area, sort of indicating the reuse. If suppose F1 and F2 are O1, that means. You know, 1 over this area would be my reuse distance. That because the uniform, I'm going to access it, right?
Yeah.
So something like that.
Then
right?
P1 will go in first, and then
don't you
remains.
Have any mixing? I mean, you still need
because
to have
LRU
some
doesn't know that there are two processes. It just knows that there are certain addresses being accessed.
Right.
So it's just looking at addresses. Whichever addresses have smaller reuse distance get to stay in the cache; others don't.
But that's the ultimate. That's a stationary behavior. Transient behavior is not like that, right? So what we want to capture is a transient behavior. That means that if there is a hit, there needs to be brought into the cache. So there is a sort of a presence there of P1's working set inside the cache.
It'll be 100% miss rate if F2 or S2 is greater than F1 over S1. P1 will experience 100% miss rate in the cache.
What if they're the same? 50%?
If they are the same, then P1 will experience 100% hit rate. Because P1 is smaller, it will fit. I mean, then it depends on the size of S1 and S2 and the cache size. If let's say.
Not true. Okay, so let's think about this.
Okay, we're looking at if F1 or S1 equals F2 or S2, right? That's what you're saying. That they all have the same
sort
uses.
Of the same uses. So, first of all, I'm not getting that if there's going to be overwhelmed by the other one, but I'm just posing this just that I want sort of a data.
If this is true?
Yeah, what if that happens? You have to have some kind of intermixing for this. It can percolate into.
LRU sees all addresses being accessed with relatively the same. Reuse distance, then ideally, right, if no block is more preferentially treated than the other one, right, and then we have, so C is the size of the cache, right?
Mm-hmm.
C is the size of the cache.
Right.
Then the fraction.
If it's fair, it's going to be half a half, right?
C or
maybe
S1. Plus S2 times S1 would be the amount of space allocated to B1. So this will be the amount of cache allocated to B1.
Right. Yeah.
S1 plus S2 times S2 is what P2 gets. That's in the case that all blocks are treated with the same importance. Now,
right.
This is actually, and the miss rate will be just. So this will be the hit rate, right? That's the hit rate.
Yeah.
The hit rate.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah.
And this rate will be 1 minus that.
Yeah. Because it's more under provision.
Yeah.
Mesh, right.
Now
yeah.
The miss rate is 1 minus that, but the miss rate of P1
is proportional to whatever it is.
Yeah, exactly. So
yeah.
The miss rate of P1 will be. So
this I'm actually trying to basically looking at this picture.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking at the picture is just that little bit tilted to the other one. Say
if this is
let's say you know F1 S1 is just twice as much as F2 over S2, right?
Oh,
so,
I see. So this
yeah. So I would just want to see that whether tilting makes just a, you know, in the end, instead of mixing, you make a sort of a 0-1 decision. Then in the end, it was just only F, you know, the P2's working settings there.
If this
right,
is
yeah.
true,
yeah. If this is true,
everything, all of it is P2. All of it is P2 because the items of P2 have lower reuse distance.
I would say everybody agree with that. That's the part I don't agree. I know it is reduced distance, you are shorter. But that does not mean I'm not there. I still need to actually bring the things to the cache.
That's the conventional cache, right? So in the conventional cache you would always bring in. So there will be one item, one slot of the cache that will keep cycling. For P1.
I think it will converge to that configuration.
Which configuration?
The one you're pointing at, in which everything is populated by the one that's more that has a shorter reduced distance.
Yeah.
It will converge to
yes.
The right. Okay.
Ricardo.
So I have my doubts about the granularity in which we're looking at this problem, because we're talking about processes, and
yeah.
I was thinking of when I was talking about cost, I thought that it would be much more significant or helpful to define it as expensive access to the storage, such as
yeah.
going through the network.
Yeah.
And on those systems, what happens is that if you have different virtual machines, you just divide the cache into different partitions depending on the miss rate curve and you decide how much resources each VM
yeah.
has. And inside what happens on that VM will happen this for the
yeah.
So I was thinking of when I was talking about cost, I was thinking about talking about the cost of the larger
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
Which is fine, yeah.
I think
yeah.
the P1 and P2 is just weird. Thinking about it just for, but they could be two different virtual machines also, right? But P1 and P2, in the traces we have for the desktop, there we have many different processes doing many different things, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you look at a web server, there's only one process that's running web service.
That's true.
So we don't have this
on the others, right? So on behalf, the web server is simply a sort of coalesce
yeah.
all the accesses, right?
Yeah.
And put in there. So there's a driver for that.
Yeah, but what you see is a combined effect.
Right.
When you see the stream of axes, you don't know anything more than that. You just see the stream
right.
of axes at the cache level.
Yeah, so this can be just seen as hypothetical there.
Yeah.
Right? Hypothetical. It's coming from the same web server.
Yeah.
But on behalf of the two processes, they
yeah.
have different. Right.
Yeah, you could have that situation
right.
where you have multiple working sets and there's a larger working set that is basically a
right.
combination of these two.
Right. So
right.
so coming back to that picture, the way of turning on and off the cache, all right? So let's suppose, I'm not going to argue on hanging on this. I think
yeah.
you are right. In the steady state, you have, you know, in short distance, you're going to kick out
whoever has longer distance. Let's suppose the situation. This is a very simple situation where that you have that. So the reason I want to hang on that is because I see cache as a mixing of all different processes in action and sort of having their presence in cache.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's not the case, but yeah, I think that it's transient to probably have that.
Mm-hmm.
So what I want to say is if you turn on and off the cache, now you look at, so now let's say, let's go back to that situation where there's equal thing,
mm-hmm.
the first case, right? So you have the mixing that you calculated as the miss rate and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So the eventual, the hit rate and miss rate is this, right? It doesn't matter where S1, S1. It's just the total working set.
Yeah.
And compared to the cache size, that's your hit rate, right? So what's, you know, over it is going to be your miss rate,
mm-hmm.
right? And if that's going to be the case, now, we have to argue that why... The turning on and off is going to benefit, because if you turn it on, maybe it's benefiting one process, but it will hurt the other.
No, it won't, because if in the steady state, the fraction of the cache doesn't know which access is coming for which process, it just knows the address, right? So if the hit rate is stable or the miss rate is stable, then it is better to turn off cache replacement, because your miss rate is not going to change by turning it on. It's going to be stable.
It's stable, not necessary.
Because each item in the cache is being reused at a certain rate. So any item you replace with that is either going to be reused with the same rate or a rate that is greater. So it's not going to improve the hit ratio. It's going to keep it stable, or potentially make it worse. And this is after the system has reached a steady state. Once it reached a steady state, then turn the replacement off, because you know that the miss rate is stable. So that's why I think that a thresholding kind of trigger, where you say miss rate reaches a certain level, I'm going to switch it off, or goes above, you turn it on. I think it was fine for some initial understanding, but I don't think it is the right triggering mechanism for turning it on and off. It's more to do with the stability of the miss rate, you see. If it's becoming stable, then you turn it off. It start varying again, you turn it on again. Because varying means that there is new data, new portions of the working set, there are new items that are being accessed more frequently, which is why the miss rate changes. And if the miss rate is stable, it means, okay, the behavior is constant, there's the same amount of miss rate that you're experiencing, whether you're turning it on or off, just turn it off, because there is a cost of running the replacement, which is eviction.
I hear his idea.
Hmm.
Can you go back to that bot right here?
Yeah. Just this one. Yes.
Yeah.
So why don't we just, you know, instead of a detection first, we know at a certain point, right? Like 200,000, right?
Yeah.
Turn it off.
Yeah.
Turn it on and take a look whether you're going to get better results.
Just
2,000, between 2,000 and then something like that, that we know is a stable state.
Yeah.
Turn it off and see whether eventually you will get
better. Oh, certainly you will. It's, I mean, just by looking at the figure, you see it will, right? Because you cannot do anything worse than 100% miss rate.
Let's see whether
you have each of these is an eviction, so you'll reduce all those evictions. Every miss is an eviction.
Well, yes, indeed.
By the way, that idea that you have now of stability, it does, it's parallel to the idea of ranking that we discussed. It makes sense with the idea of ranking that we defined. Because in that case, the reuses and the diffusion are equivalent.
Yeah.
They are in the same rank.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's, yeah.
Which I guess we will talk about that.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's
we should probably talk
about it right now. Yeah.
So so for Steven, I think you're trying to figure out something, right? You need to come up with a stability of miss rate somehow. So if you see that the miss rate is stable over a period of time, then turn it off. And then if you see it varying again, so we're expecting it that after you turn it off, it continues to be at the same level. But if it changes, then you turn it on again, until it becomes stable again. That's one potential alternative you could work with?
The only worry I have is, I mean, even in a situation where it's the 100% miss rate, and it is stable that way, but if you're trying to get into a new working set,
yeah,
in the first place, you're just going to continue the 100% miss part.
Very good.
So that's the biggest worry, so we might have to have an upper threshold if we're going to have something similar to that.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
That's a good point. Yeah, we get stuck in a bad spot, right?
Yeah.
Something for you to think about. That's a research question. I'm sure you'll come up with something. Maybe the, I mean, if you turn off cash replacement and you're at 100% miss rate, good luck. Good luck turning it on again.
But this is where I think something such as rank can really come in handy. Especially if the rank is starting to get smaller, let's say, instead of staying rather large, then maybe we should be turning it back on.
Certainly we should think about that. Let's have
I think we need to listen to that otherwise.
So I know we're short in time, so maybe we can talk some more later if it's possible.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm having some doubts about how related it is having the miss rates being high or low and taking actions depending on the ranking. Because I think I'm just thinking about the optimal algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
I thought a lot about the optimal algorithm, and I know it's not the only mechanism to determine whether this will be helpful or not. But by looking at it, I see that you can, the optimal algorithm will find a right time to set an eviction or not, without independently from any other address that has been addressed. Access before or at that time, and independent of the miss rates, because you can decide whether or not to evict a page if it has lower reuse distance, wherever you have high evictions or not. You can find a way to say, well, if I evict this page, then I will have a miss later on, so I should not. Let's just wait. Even if you have 100% miss rates, you have one less miss in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
I still see a benefit when you have a stable low miss rate, because you can still make some random access to a random part of your working set, which is not as important as the one you have in the cache right now. So you can say, well, I'm not gonna evict this page right now. So by thinking more and more about this property, I find it harder to relate it to higher or lower miss rates, because I think you can still find a benefit without knowing that information, and just by looking at the optimal algorithm. I don't know if maybe we need to make some relation toward the miss rates to do it looking at the past. But
optimal, you mean looking at the future?
Optimal, by optimal, I mean knowing the future and deciding the best option.
Yeah, okay.
So it's just looking at the net accesses, which is basically the size of the cache.
Mm.
It's only that you care, because if...
Well, you do need a current state of the cache, right? And then look at the future.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? The any access, you have to look at the current configuration of the cache.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. What you have in the cache at this point in time, what you're going to have, the type of accesses you're going to have in the net size of the cache accesses.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it. Because you only...
just to modify that, you need unique accesses.
Unique
accesses equivalent to the size of the cache. Not just number of accesses.
Yes, exactly.
Yes,
exactly.
So what is your question?
So my question is, why we were talking about a meta property last on a discussion when we were talking about the reuse distance, and this meta property will be to look at it in the macro micro perspective, and not only look at saying, well, the victim page and the page being evicted, and just look at the whole at a whole point in time, a whole window of time, and say, well, how many of these cases do I have, or how many of the other cases do I have, and where or not to decide on the evictions. But I that seems not very clear to me right now, as I see that this property can find in a micro way, you can find a better solution, and you don't have to, because if you decide to turn on or off the evictions at a certain point in time, you will have some cases in which it's not helpful and some cases in which it will be very helpful.
Can you give an example?
For example, let's say that we have certain
you,
windows.
You can erase this stuff on the left.
So let's say that we look at a certain window of time.
Yeah.
So we have, I don't know, n accesses at this point in time, and this is the size of our window.
Yeah.
And we have that, I don't know, one third, so n third of these accesses are good for activating evictions, and two thirds of these accesses are not good for eviction by looking at the radius distance of the evicting page and
okay.
Okay, so in this case we would, for example, decide, well, since we have more of these than this, then we disable evictions.
Oh no. If there is even a portion of the axes where having the algorithm on is useful, then we should keep the algorithm on. Because if we don't, then we have lower miss rate. Lower hit rate.
That's not entirely true, because it depends on in which case this.
No, if n over, you just told me that n over 3 axes are beneficial to replace.
Yeah.
Then if you don't do that, then you will have worse hit rate.
So
ultimately,
it's going to be a cost model, right? So eventually, it's going to be a trade-off.
Yeah. But the way it faces is much higher than anything else.
Because
right.
we have four cases in this case, we have case one. Case one. Let's define these two concepts, which is a victim page.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the victim in the replacement algorithm, and we have the next request, which is the page making the request at that point in time.
Yeah, evicting page. Yeah, I don't like the terminology, but keep going on.
Okay,
we can
maybe change this, but let's just define it so we can understand faster the cases. So let's say that let's call this E and let's call this N.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say that ranking of E is bigger than ranking
of N.
Oh. Yeah. Let's don't confuse this.
And how is it related to the size of the cache? How are these related to the size of the cache? Because we are talking about equivalence. Are both of them on the left or on the right of that line? Right? Those are the criteria we follow.
Exactly. So, okay, by bigger is that this one is on the. Let's say that this one is on the left side and this is on the right side.
Yeah. Okay.
So
we keep E.
So we keep E.
So cache replacement should be off.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the case two,
mm-hmm.
in which ranking P equals to ranking of NS.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if it's on the right side or the left side. If they're equal,
yeah.
it doesn't matter. We don't evict.
Yeah.
We have the case three,
mm-hmm.
in which...
Are we talking about one particular page, or are we talking about...
We're talking about two particular pages. A page that is making the eviction,
yeah. mm-hmm.
and that it's going to be evicted, and a page that is making the request from the cache.
Mm-hmm.
So and we have the third case in which the RE is on the right side,
mm-hmm.
and RNS is on the left side.
Yeah.
So if we have, in this case,
mm-hmm.
it is beneficial to disable evictions because
mm-hmm.
we know we're going to have a hit
yeah.
there
mm-hmm.
if we leave this page on the cache.
Yeah.
So if in this case
mm-hmm.
we have more elements of this case than one third,
yeah.
then it will still be beneficial overall to disable the cache. We won't have less hits.
Mm-hmm.
We can still do better.
No, we will have less hits. We turn off the cache because there are n third of the cases where you will benefit from
exactly.
keeping the cache replacement algorithm on.
It won't be optimal, but the performance won't be worse either.
It will
Why?
Be a lot worse.
It wouldn't be worse because you have n over three fewer potential hits.
Okay, so you have n over three potential hits here, but you have two thirds will be potential hits too, assuming that most of them land on this case.
Most, you said it's two-thirds, right?
Exactly, most of them. Like two-thirds, if two-thirds land of this case, then the benefit of disabling
yeah.
the...
It would become trivially obvious to you if you write a function that takes into account the weight of each one. So you would do, how would you compute the cost of all this? So you would say, okay, there's a fraction of the accesses in which I have misses, right? So there's a factor multiplying that fraction plus a factor multiplying a fraction that are not misses, that are hits, right? And of course, there are many other terms because there's a cost associated to updating the writing to the cache. There's a cost associated to maybe writing from the cache to the storage. It's not just updating the cache, but making the eviction, writing the page if it's dated to the backend storage. There's a cost associated to each one of these operations. The cost, the factor multiplying the miss is huge because when there's a miss, you have to go all the way to the storage. So that latency is much higher than any other latency, which means that if you have a small fraction, even much smaller than of misses than hits, the overall cost increases substantially because the factor multiplying that fraction is huge because the latency of going to the storage is very high. Does that make sense to you? That's why we cannot afford to have many more misses than what we originally have.
Right.
Because the cost goes up very fast.
I know what you mean.
So Ricardo, let me say one thing because we had to stop. When we were talking about this modeling last time, I was looking at windows of time where everything
was the same.
Was the same, and so you don't have intermixing of this stuff.
Oh yeah, but remember that when we decided to simplify in the beginning the windowing property
mm-hmm.
and say that it was fit size. So if I define it as a fit
size
in my model at
yeah.
first, I need to make some kind of decision.
The simplest way is that when you have two different types within the same window, ignore. Keep the replacement on.
Actually, what we...
That's the first...
What we plan to plot is the same thing, having a percentage. How many of those are good for us, how many are not. So we have two graphs, one on top of the other, with percentage of misses and percentage in which it's a good case to disable the cache. If it's high, then you know that you could do it or not.
Yeah, okay, you could do it that way too. But I think the simplest would be when you have all the accesses required, you know, are benefited from disabling the cache.
Yes.
Versus not.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, that's okay. So, well, we can. I there's
it's a
one,
simpler analysis.
There's
but
one
let's,
more thing I wanted to consult.
But we'll do it later.
Yeah,
yeah,
we can do it later.
Yeah.
So, is there any time to it, or maybe we can set up another day this week?